Welcome back. 705, this is CFRA Live. Number of issues on the docket left to talk about today. The ongoing situation in Ukraine. An Ottawa man pushing back against Air Canada for what he called just being completely embarrassed and humiliated. A disability advocate himself. Max, a bro here in Ottawa, planning a trip to his son's dream wedding in Hawaii for years. Air Canada knows he has a wheelchair, and it just becomes a nightmare. We'll hear from Max coming up later on as well, but tough one to listen to. And you just kind of want to, you've booked your flight, you've done everything right. Why does it have to be a fight just because, you know, you're in a wheelchair? It's a tough one for Max, for sure. We'll talk to, we'll hear from him coming up later on this hour as well. And also the continued fallout from the Hockey Canada scandal. Continuing on Saturday, Chair resigning. Could that be the first of many to come? We'll talk about that coming up after the 7:30 news as well. We continue to follow the situation in Ukraine as it appears as though it has turned into what will be a grinding war of attrition. Canada announcing this week that it will be training Ukrainian forces in a third country to try to help aid Ukraine in the ongoing conflict. Jean-Francois Rotel is a military expert and assistant professor at the University of Ottawa. I spoke to him this week about the troop deployment, the troop training, and whether or not it will help the ongoing situation in that country.
Because we're entering in a part of the war where professional soldiers have been killed. There is more conscript and less, having more newly recruited soldiers. So training new forces, being able to put them to the battlefield for an upcoming offensive, Ukrainian offensive, is extremely important.
And do you expect, I know we've seen other NATO countries do what they can in terms of military aid, do we expect, you know, other NATO countries to follow suit to help, you know, in training aspirations?
Well, the United Kingdom has been having a program now for a couple of months that have been training Ukrainian forces on British soil. We expect probably the United States also to get involved more openly about such training, but it is probably critical for Ukraine as much as it is to receive very advanced military system. This training will provide a new way for Ukraine to be able to retake territory. We've seen that Canadian training that were provided before the new invasion in Ukraine has made a big difference for Ukrainian forces, especially around Kyiv early in the war.
Which, you know, good for Canada on that front and for Ukraine's help on this front. I just wanted to ask in terms of, you know, is us adding more training and training more soldiers and, you know, adding more equipment, is this kind of telling you we are, you know, in for a pretty long and grinding war of attrition here?
I think we are, in a way, because since 2014, Canada has played a role in training Ukrainian soldiers and providing assistance in different way to Ukraine. One of the worry about the Ukrainian government in the war was that Western countries and NATO would grow tired of the war and move to something else. But training programs such as this one take more time, take more involvement. So it shows dedication from the Canadian government to really stand with Ukraine and against the Russian invasion.
And we've also, it's interesting to see because obviously there's a military conflict and there's also politics that kind of surrounds it as well. So Ukraine's ambassador to Canada expected to speak to Parliament today. She's expected to make it very clear that her country is very disappointed about Canada's decision to allow a pipeline equipment that was in Montreal for repairs to be returned to Russia, to an energy giant there, despite some sanctions. Do you think that this will, you know, the politics of this will at all play a part in the conflict and in our, relations with Ukraine moving forward?
Well, I think it certainly will help the relationship with Ukraine. The situation with the Gazprom material certainly hurt the relationship with the Ukrainian government. At the same time, Canada has to balance their interests and their relationship. Germany is an allied part of NATO, so Canada has to understand and play on the broader game where they have to manage the interests of their allies as well as Ukraine. But I think on the long run, the dedication of the Canadian government to support Ukraine is pretty obvious. And the events with regard to Gazprom were fairly minimal. So I think on the long run, the relationship with Ukraine will remain strong and stable, especially with this commitment.
Well, and, you know, you brought up Germany as well. They've also been kind of in the middle of this as well in terms of their own relations with Russia as well, and the natural gas and other kind of energy connections that they have as well. Does Germany's kind of position in this kind of put them at a, I guess, a disadvantage too in terms of its own relations with the broader international community?
It is certainly difficult for Germany because they've been relying so much on Russian gas and Russian oil in the recent years compared to other partners in Europe. Germany has tried, in a way, to salvage their own economy with the sanction to try to avoid damaging their economy, but at the same time supporting Ukraine and supporting NATO. They're certainly in a situation that is very difficult to manage compared to the United States, for example, or the United Kingdom. And we can see that it has affected the amount of military aid and support provided by Germany since the beginning of the war.
And just, I wanted to ask you as well, we've seen some reports about kind of a counteroffensive in Russia's, or in the Kherson province in the south as well, that Ukraine is saying that they are having some success there. Do you see, I guess, any success for Ukraine on the horizon in terms of being able to take back some of its land?
Well, so far the success are tactical and limited. It's limited where Russia cannot resupply their troops on the west bank of the Dnipro River. At the same time, it starts somewhere. So it is good progress in showing that Ukraine is able to use advanced military system to launch, at least for the moment, small counteroffensive. However, for major counteroffensive throughout the region, the Kherson region and the south, they will require more military hardware. They will require more professional troops and soldiers. That's where Canada come and play an important role, because with conscript and newly recruited soldiers, it is extremely difficult to organize an offensive, as we have seen in the case of Russia in northern Ukraine. So overall, it is positive for Ukraine. I think we are slowly seeing a change in the momentum in the war, at least in the south of Ukraine. But at the same time, it will be a long run for Ukraine to take back part of its territory as Russia has fortified their position throughout southern Ukraine.
Military expert Jean-Francois Rotel at the University of Ottawa speaking this week about Canada's decision to send military trainers to the UK to help teach Ukrainians how to fight invading Russian forces. Defense Minister Anita Anand says up to 225 Canadian Armed Forces members will eventually be based in Britain for an initial period of 4 months. They will work alongside counterparts from Britain, the Netherlands, and New Zealand in training those Ukrainian soldiers on the basics.
The activities of our Canadian Armed Forces are going to be relating to frontline combat, weapons handling, first aid, field craft, patrol tactics, and include the law of armed conflict, which is a mandatory course in the training session.
Now, the move comes nearly 6 months after Canada suspended its previous training mission in Ukraine just weeks before Russian forces invaded that country. Also on the international stage, Taiwan says China's military drills appear to simulate an attack on itself on the self-ruled island after multiple Chinese warships and aircraft crossed the median line of the Taiwan Strait. Taiwan's Ministry of National Defense says its armed forces has issued an alert, dispatched air and naval patrols around the island, and activated land-based missile systems in response to the situation. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken weighing in on this yesterday. He says the U.S. remains dedicated to talking with China.
We'll keep our channels of communication with China open with the intent of avoiding escalation due to misunderstanding or miscommunication.
Blinken also weighing in on the Taiwan Strait and its international significance.
What happens in the Taiwan Strait affects the entire region. In many ways, it affects the entire world because the strait, like the South China Sea, is a critical waterway.
China launched the military drills following U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan earlier this week, saying that her visit violated the one China policy. Speaking in the Philippines yesterday, as I mentioned, Blinken saying Pelosi's trip was consistent with longstanding U.S. policy.
The total disproportion between a peaceful visit on the one hand and escalatory military maneuvers on the other, I think is very clear and very clear to countries throughout the region. And certainly that's what I've been hearing as I've been here for the last few days.
And China sees Taiwan as a breakaway province to be annexed by force if necessary. It considers visits to Taiwan by foreign officials as recognizing its sovereignty. So just another one on the ongoing, I guess, global conflict, but China very unhappy with Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan and reacting as well. And another story out this morning just before we go to break. New figures showing that Ottawa spent a record $153 million on medical marijuana for Canadian veterans last year, and that it's on track to spend nearly $200 million this year as more and more veterans turn to the drug. Surge in demand prompting fresh calls for more research into potential benefits and harms of pot on struggling veterans. Oliver Thorne of the Veterans Transition Network in Vancouver says there's no long-term data yet on the effects of someone using medical marijuana to address physical or psychological injury.
There is still a lot of research that needs to be done to fully understand the benefits, how it affects people, how various doses and the different chemicals within medical marijuana affect people, and what that looks like over time as well. We don't have any long-term data yet on what the effect is of somebody using medical marijuana as their primary, treatment to address either a physical or a psychological injury. We just don't know what that looks like if somebody does that for 10 years.
Yeah, the federal government first started reimbursing veterans for medical marijuana back in 2008. The increasing use also raised concerns about veterans using marijuana to avoid dealing with psychological trauma and the need for more funding for counseling and other peer supports. 718, this is CFRA Live. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Max Bro is a disability advocate here in Ottawa. Had his own issue on an Air Canada flight. We'll talk to him about his story coming up after the break. This is CFRA Live. An Ottawa man and disability advocate is pushing Air Canada to make changes after they botched his travel arrangements for his recent trip to Hawaii, one he called a trip of a lifetime. Max Bro says he was embarrassed and humiliated by his treatment by Air Canada staff, who were completely unprepared to deal with a man in a wheelchair. And Max joins us to talk about his experience this afternoon. Max, thanks so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for giving me the time. I much appreciate it.
Oh, no problem at all. Let's just start. I know you were prepping for a 2-week trip to Hawaii for a very special occasion. So maybe just explain to us your original travel plans and then how Air Canada kind of got in the way.
Well, the original plans were my stepson was going to get married in Hawaii and on the beach of Waikiki, Honolulu. So, we started planning this during the COVID season with about 2 years worth of planning. So this wasn't a quick do, let's do this and let's, travel in a week's time. So we spent 2 years planning this out, figuring out how to get to Ottawa, get to Honolulu, and deal with my disability. And so, the first step in any kind of travel in Canada, when you're going to use WestJet or Air Canada, is you call them up and you let them know, okay, here I am, a person with a disability. I'm going to be traveling with some kind of equipment. Here's what my equipment looks like. Make sure that it's totally legal for me to fly with. And then proceed to buy the ticket and then make sure that it's registered with them. And they've had this system now for years where once you're a person with a disability, it's registered with the system. They know when you're going to show up. They know the equipment you're going to show up, and they know all that fun stuff. So on the day of the travel, which was, April the 14th, I showed up at 7:30 in the morning, ready to get on my plane to go for Toronto. And the person behind the counter looks at my wife and says, oh, will he be traveling with you? And I looked at them and I said, well, wait a sec. Don't you have my file on your computer? Well, sorry, sir, there's no information about you here. And, at the end of the day, it got really frustrating because I really rode my travel agent really hard. I kept on saying to her over the 2 years, please validate that Air Canada knows I'm traveling with a wheelchair. Please make sure they validate I'm traveling with a battery. And they said, yep, they're fully aware. They understand you're coming. And, we have all of this recorded, all of this documented. And yet on the day of the travel, they couldn't find my information at all.
And I think anybody can, I guess, empathize with the amount of frustration that that must have made you feel. I guess, what recourse do you have, though, at that point when, you know, you're standing at the gate for your flight trying to go to your stepson's, you know, wedding in Hawaii, and they're telling you they can't take you?
Yeah, and one of the things that I need to be clear here, I travel with something called a lithium battery.
Okay.
And lithium batteries are kind of known to be, well, explosive if they're not well-contained and they're in good shape. So, you know, anybody can't just show up and go, I'm going to travel with a lithium battery. You need Air Canada to go through a process of about 48 hours to validate that this lithium battery is safe. And so they're looking at me going, well, you might not be able to travel today, sir. And my wife quickly started going through all the paperwork. And all of a sudden she found on one piece of paper, and it was in really small print, that said, you know, Air Canada authorizes Mr. Brill to travel with a lithium battery. And then they let us on. And then I had no recourse. Like, what are you supposed to do there?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you come across as that angry person in the airport, right? And whoever wants to deal with you. But the problem is this story continued in Toronto when I was going to Vancouver. And it happened when I was in Vancouver going to Honolulu. It wasn't just one time. It was three times.
And to just talk, you know, this isn't your first rodeo in terms of flying. And also, you're an advocate yourself. You know, you feel comfortable speaking out about some of these issues. You know, are you concerned that this may be happening to others who may not be as likely to speak out and say something like you?
Well, that's it. I mean, that's why I came through with my story, you know, today, is that at the end of the day, I had to put my own personal beliefs aside, and I had to go and fight for the community. I had to be a voice for the people that don't have a voice, or when they're caught in a situation, don't know how to get themselves out of it. And that's it. At the end of the day, I'm really upset with Air Canada, because it's like, as soon as COVID hit, it's like they pressed the reset button on dealing with customer service and people with disabilities. And everything they learned, everything they had in place, is like disappear. Poof, it's gone. This stuff doesn't go away. They have the manuals. They have the tools. They know how to deal with us. But instead of learning how to do this or taking extra training during COVID slow times, people like us are showing up and we're getting really bad service. Some people are really getting hurt in this process. There's a case in the United States where a person lost their wheelchair. That wheelchair was totally destroyed. And because she had a very severe physical disability, they couldn't find a replacement wheelchair in time for her. And she ended up passing away 6 months later because of the consequences of not having the proper equipment. This is serious, right? And here in Canada, it hasn't happened yet. But do we need to have that happen? Does somebody need to die or get severely hurt? And that's the question I pose to Air Canada. And I don't want to be that individual. Nobody wants to be that individual. And there's a rash of cases now happening with Air Canada and WestJet about really poor customer service dealing with people with disabilities.
And just, what do you make of, it's 2022, you know, the fact that, you know, you called this incident embarrassing, and I think anybody can understand. You just want to do what you've planned to do, right? Just to have a flight like everybody normally does when they go to the airport. So I guess, you know, in 2022, does it surprise you that, you know, we're still struggling to deal with this in some areas?
Yeah, and then to be honest with you, my day job is to advocate for persons with disabilities, right? So I wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning, do a job like you do. I advocate. I put my best foot forward. I move the file along. I help the individual. And, you know, but when it comes to my personal life, I don't want to be an advocate. I just want to be like you. You know, I just want to show up. I want to go to Hawaii. I want to see the surfers. I want to have a few Mai Tais. I want to sit in the sun. I don't want to think about my job. I don't want to have to do my job to get there, right?
I just want to blend in.
Yeah, I just want to blend in. And my poor wife, you know, she doesn't want me doing my job. She doesn't want me being that, you know, that advocate that puts on the stern voice and says, thou shalt do or else, right kind of voice. And you know, for her, it was not a vacation because here's her husband going off being what he does for a living. And I'm not a happy camper because I'm going, holy Moses, everything that's happening to my clients is happening to me. And what the hell's going on here? You know?
Yeah, it forces you to be in that position with through no fault of your own. I guess, have you been in, or has Air Canada been in touch with you directly in terms of trying to rectify the situation or what have you?
No, and the news article that came out said that, you know, they were going to get in contact with me. Well, it's 48 hours later, still haven't heard from them.
Well, I guess we'll hearken to see what Air Canada has to say next. But Max, sorry for the situation that you went through, and thanks so much for joining us to talk about it. I appreciate it. I hope you enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, and if I can say one last thing.
Absolutely.
If anybody's having issues with flying with Air Canada, you know, let your member of parliament know. Let Air Canada know, because if you're being quiet about it, we can fix the system. So please, let your voice be heard. Let's see if we can fix this.
It's disability advocate Max Breaux sharing his story. Just wanted to mention the Ottawa Citizen did get a statement from Air Canada saying that Air Canada said they bungled this, but they say they've been in touch with Max. Max says that's not the case. 729, we'll take a quick break here for CFRA Live, from CFRA Live. For the news, Ethan Fink standing by. When we come back, new news, new developments on the Hockey Canada front. We'll talk about that coming up after the break. 7:36, and it is a hot and sticky one out there already, so make sure you're prepared for that. Yesterday, the warmest day of the year so far here in Ottawa, and it looks like, or it feels like anyway, so far that today could top it. Just a text from Mark here on Elgin. Just, I went to the Loblaws in Isabella. On the way back, the sun was hot. I think today is the day the movie Predator was filmed. Definitely apt out there. Hot and sticky for sure. So make sure you're drinking plenty of water out there and staying hydrated and out of the sun as much as you can on that front. Also wanted to pass along a note here. When it comes to the Wolf Island Ferry, service disruption. The Wolf Island Ferry, the service has been completely shut down today. Starting at 8 o'clock, expecting to resume service tomorrow evening. Let me see. It looks like it's going to resume so far tonight at 7 o'clock. Just reading this right now. It says the impacts of an industry-wide shortage of licensed mariners have affected our staffing complements. However, we will continue our attempts to secure a qualified crew member in an effort to minimize vessel downtime. So, difficult if you live on Wolf Island or you're visiting Wolf Island this weekend. There's no way on or off today. In that note, just seeing, yeah, I sent out very late last night. Actually, early this morning. So not much time to respond as well. The ferry says it will remain on short notice to respond to emergency services only, and that we apologize for this necessary service disruption and thank you for patience and understanding. So just a note to pass along, the Wolf Island Ferry service is shut down today, starting at 8 o'clock in about 20 minutes, and that will continue for the rest of the day. So we've been talking about hospital staffing shortage. It's been the most acute in terms of what we're seeing and the effects that we're seeing, but staffing shortage is happening across all sectors, including for mariners, apparently, as well. But just something to keep in mind as well. Private sector also dealing with a number of short-staffed issues as well. 7:38, finally a shakeup of Hockey Canada's board of directors on Saturday in the wake of a sexual misconduct scandal. Chair Michael Brindamore has announced his resignation. He says his immediate departure was necessary. It follows Hockey Canada's appointment Thursday of former Canadian Supreme Court Justice Thomas Cromwell to review the governance of the country's governing body of hockey. The review expected to provide interim recommendations before Hockey Canada meets for its annual general meeting in November. Hockey Canada's board of directors says it will meet in the coming days to determine next steps following Brindamore's resignation and to appoint an interim chair as well. Now, this scandal in which some players were accused of sexually assaulting women could affect payment dues by Hockey Canada members as well. The so-called slush fund used to settle sex assault lawsuits, a big point of contention here. TSN's Rick Westhead has been uncovering the story for weeks now. He says he's been reaching out to Brindamore for weeks for comment, but with no response. In the resignation yesterday, he says that his resignation could lead to more.
I, you know, truly believe they're trying to weather this. They likely have a good crisis management firm working with them. You know, they have said that they're going to follow through on this extensive action plan that has been disclosed. They have reopened an investigation into these allegations related to the 2018 World Juniors hockey team. They've appointed a former Canadian Supreme Court judge to investigate their governance. So they are, you know, saying that all the right things. We'll see. I talked to a member of parliament today who told me after the resignation of Michael Brind'Amour, it's not enough, that the trust with this organization has been broken and that profound change is needed by everyone. I've heard repeatedly from MPs that even though they accept apologies, you know, because Hockey Canada officials have apologized for what's happened, but there's a difference between saying you're sorry and being held accountable for it. And again, the MPs I've talked to say that this has just gone too far. You know, one of the points that they make repeatedly is the existence for decades of a fund that was used to quietly pay sexual abuse allegation settlements. That fund, of course, was propped up with money from hockey parents across Canada who didn't know that they were providing a way for Hockey Canada to deal with these complaints quietly, because the Federation never announced publicly that it was actually maintaining that fund.
Now, because of that fund, Hockey Canada also starting to face pressure from grassroots hockey organizations as well. Well, the fund and the, I guess, actions attached to those, allegedly. Canada's 13 provincial hockey federations have also requested an extraordinary meeting with leaders at Hockey Canada. It's being led by Hockey Quebec. The 10 provincial and 3 territorial associations want more information on the handling of sex assault allegations and the use of that fund to pay for uninsured liabilities, including sex abuse settlements as well. Now, the organization has stated that it will no longer use that national equity fund to settle those claims, but the provincial and territorial hockey associations have been threatening to withhold payment without the answers that they would need. We reached out to Hockey Eastern Ontario for comment late yesterday, still waiting to hear back for comment. In terms of how they're responding and what they've been hearing from parents, it's been a concern that we have heard from parents the last little while. But if polling tells us anything, a new poll this week showing the majority of Canadians are angry with Hockey Canada. The Nano survey for CTV News and the Globe and Mail showing 73% of Canadians feeling anger about the situation. Pollster Nick Nanos.
People don't think that there's a significant problem when it comes to recreational hockey for boys and girls, but it's that feeder. It's kind of like that one spot that kind of leads to the NHL that is more likely to be seen as a problem. The other thing that's quite striking, and I think this is very important for Hockey Canada and the sport writ large, is that many Canadians feel that this is cultural, that it's systemic. Mm-hmm. And I think that means that this really has to be tackled head on.
Pollster Nick Nanos looking at their numbers this week, showing many Canadians angry. 63% of Canadians also view sex assault in hockey as part of a bigger cultural problem as well, compared to just 26% who called it isolated to a handful of players as well. So it looks like it's not just the board at Hockey Canada. It sounds like the culture needs a very stiff change at Hockey Canada as well. All of this as well, coming in the, I guess, in the shadows of the World Junior Hockey Championship that's set to go later this month in Edmonton, this week, actually. So I'm sure many players having to deal with that as well. And I think this is the issue for Hockey Canada as well, on top of the numerous things that we've already talked about. But just now you've got World Junior Hockey players at the peak of their junior hockey careers, and they have to answer for decisions that you've made that have put them in that light. So as much as we talk about the culture, they've pushed that forward, right? They've kept that going, and rightly or wrongly, but now players on Team Canada this year getting set to play in Edmonton, it's a very big thing for their career, and now they have to answer to actions that you made. Very difficult. So the Team Canada does open the tournament August 10th at Rogers Place, obviously with a pall over the event because of those ongoing issues. But at least I think this is a start of a, shakeup at Hockey Canada. I can't believe it took this long for Brind'Amour to resign, to be quite honest. It has been weeks. He's been there for 4 years. I think this was an automatic, but as Rick West had said, it sounds like they're working with a crisis management firm and trying to fight off as much of this as we can, but the story is not going away anytime soon. 7:45. This is CFRA Live. Coming up at the top of the hour, our CFRA Live Sunday political panel, Tasha Carradine, Warren Kinsella, and Carl Belanger will join us to go over the top political stories of the week as well. But we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hear more about Comic-Con adding some new guests here in Ottawa on Friday. That's coming up in September. We'll hear about that coming up after the break. This is CFRA Live. 7:49. Welcome back. This is CFRA Live. We were chatting about travel issues this week. Pearson Airport, you know, doing their best to try to sell that it's getting better there on that front. You know, its big win this week was that 44% of its planes were on time. Not exactly fantastic in terms of a batting average there. But also see yesterday south of the border is thousands of flights canceled once again. Flight attendants are speaking out on the summer travel chaos as well. So through the border, they're calling it, you know, they're saying it, the system is in shambles and it's unsustainable as well.
Welcome to
And many still kind of questioning that front in terms of where are we seeing these problems. And that's still trying to kind of nail this down. Because, you know, Air Canada will say that travel levels haven't returned to pre-pandemic. In fact, they're only, you know, a quarter or 30% of what they are. But they say they're up to 90% staff to pre-pandemic levels. But we're still dealing with these issues. It's just I can't wrap my head around what the issue is. And the U.S. also dealing with it as well. I was seeing that yesterday. So we had Duncan Dion, former Air Canada exec, earlier this week as well. And just, you know, they're just trying to survive in the sense of the airlines on that front, but still just not being able to kind of figure out what exactly is the issue. And I bring that up because a text here, it says, we were talking about Max Bro's interview, just a text here. It says, that was awful, unfortunate experience for that man with Air Canada. Seems like customer service is a thing of the past. Fortunately, I had zero issues flying with Air Canada on the long weekend last week from Ottawa to Halifax, flying with Air Canada both ways. Only complaint was the constant announcements asking if we would voluntarily check carry-on luggage because of the full plane. I can imagine that. And that from Chris and Sir Dundas. And for, you know, a lot of people, I've heard, you know, no problems whatsoever. But then you hear these horror stories that have been happening as well. You know, I lost my bag for a month and a half, or, you know, I missed my connecting flight. And that's actually what Duncan D was mentioning as well, especially here in Ottawa, where we have seen so many direct flights canceled. Direct routes canceled, I should say, because of the pandemic. Everybody's going through Toronto and Montreal, so you have to deal with it at some point on that front. I wanted to change gears a little bit here. Ottawa Comic-Con making an announcement on Friday, adding some new faces to this year's lineup, September 9th to 11th. That's happening here in the Capitol. Jason Rockman is a spokesperson for Ottawa Comic-Con. I talked to him about the new faces.
Yeah, well, you know, we previously announced that we were going to have Tomer Capone from The Boys, Carrie Elwes from The Princess Bride, and, of course, from Robin Hood, Men in Tights, and George St. Pierre, UFC legend. But today we announced three more guests. James Marsters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer is going to be joining us. Lou Ferrigno, the original Incredible Hulk, and Paul Sung-Young Lee, who's best known for his work on Kim's Convenience, but also was in The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett. So we've got more guests coming, but these additions this morning have gotten people really, really excited.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I know it kind of all goes along with scheduling as well. It's difficult for some guests as well. But what do you think adding these three adds to the lineup? That's already pretty great, as you mentioned. And I should mention that Maurice LaMarche and Rob Paulson also taking part.
Well, that's the thing. So there you go. What you just said is exactly what I tell people. You know, no matter who you announce and no matter what importance, like I'll put importance on a guy like Lou Ferrigno, but then someone will go, oh, don't forget Maurice and Rob. So there's what I love about our shows is that it touches on every aspect of pop culture. If you're a fan of something, it's well represented at our show. And I think that's one of the reasons why people get so excited when we start to announce guests, because, you know, guests are one part of the show, but the biggest part of the show is just everybody getting together under one roof and being able to share their passion for pop culture.
And what do you kind of make of that in terms of, you know, it is such a, it's become such a kind of a wide swath of culture involved. You know, as we're talking here, we're talking James Marsters, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, all the way back to The Incredible Hulk, some other kind of classics as well, cartoons. Just what do you make of how the movement or the Comic-Con kind of experience has changed so much over the last kind of couple of decades?
Well, you know, it's funny because I think the reason why these shows keep going is that everybody, you know, pop culture is so popular now. I really believe the explosion of pop culture and being allowed to celebrate it really got a kickstart again with the I can't remember the show. Anyway, so the show that came out of...
I was going to say, I do this all the time, so don't feel bad.
Yeah, there's, you know, with television, with film, there's been an explosion with pop culture. Obviously, with the Marvel Universe just expanding cinematically, that's really, really helped. Star Trek always has a resurgence when a new show happens. And it's just this thing that's kind of everywhere now, and people aren't afraid to be fans of things. When I was growing up and I was into comic books, you know, comic books in the 70s, if you said that to people, you were a nerd, and what are you doing? But we've kind of come back to take over the world, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, no kidding as well. And just another kind of mention similarly, you know, Carrie Yule, someone in The Princess Bride, Stranger Things, you know, not necessarily in the realm of, you know, comic books and superheroes, but obviously a very huge pop culture icon, the Princess Bride, Stranger Things, Robin Hood, things like that.
Oh yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it really, we touch on every aspect of pop culture. You know, someone like Carrie's a great example. Someone like George St. Pierre, you know, he's a UFC legend, but then he's crossed over to appear in Captain America. So there's always these people that come that touch on a different area. And George is a great example. He might be bringing in some UFC fans and also from, you know, fans of his character Batroc on Captain America. So it really really is well represented. And this year it's just going to continue with the guests we've announced, you know, Kim's Convenience being such a massive, massive show. And then with Paul being an X-Wing pilot in The Mandalorian, it just shows you how these people pop up in every aspect and every corner of pop culture. And when we get them, it's great.
And a lot of the people that you do meet in the industry are also huge comic book nerds as well, or comic book fans as well that you don't realize too.
Definitely.
This year, as you mentioned, you know, you are coming back for the first time in a few years, so it's great news for fans as well. September 9th to 11th. I guess what should people know in terms of getting their hands on some tickets, the venue, any changes since the last few years without? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, you know, this is back to form with for us. It's going to be happening at the UI Center, which is just a great, you know, great convention center to host this. It's just spacious. It's big. They've always been great with our event. And I always tell people, you know, get your tickets in advance because it always helps you not have to wait in line that day. But September 9th to the 11th, it's going to be happening. Tickets, you can get them at OttawaComicCon.com. The show I was blanking on is The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, there we go. Yes. My mom's favorite show, actually.
Well, there you go. Case in point. You know what I mean? I'm sure your mom would love to come to our show to get a Big Bang Theory t-shirt. So it's just that kind of thing where it crosses over generations, and it's really a fun family event.
Yeah, definitely accessible. And nice to see people kind of reflecting their passions, right? And getting it out and meeting with other kind of like-minded people, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, and I always tell people, you know, if you haven't come to Comic-Con, you'll come once and you'll want to come back, and that's why the event keeps growing.
And you'll definitely make a friend or two. But we'll leave it there. Jason, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. Ottawa Comic-Con goes September 9th to 11th. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for the support.
Jason Rockman with Ottawa Comic-Con giving us a lowdown. Some new guests added this week. That's coming up, as I mentioned, in September. You can get more information and ticket information. And who else is going to be there? A full lineup as well. There's still some little ads to be made between now and then. But you can get that on Ottawa Comic-Con's website. 7:58, we are going to take a quick break for the news here. Ethan Fink standing by with your news headlines. On the other side, CFRA Live Sunday political panel coming your way. Talk about all things federal politics coming up after the break. This is CFRA Live.